This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the CCT Review plenary call. Is there anyone that is, besides Jamie, I guess we've heard that Jamie is on. Is there anybody besides Jamie that's on but not in the Adobe Connect? For attendance purposes. Okay, and is there anybody with an update to their statement of interest? Okay. Well, as we crawl our way to the finish line here, let's give the floor to Drew Bagley to walk us through the comments and proposed responses on the DNS abuse sections of the new report. New sections of the report.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, so for today, I'm just going to focus on the reactions from the community to recommendations A, B, and C, so not recommendation D. And then I'll also address, because it's quick to discuss, I'll also just discuss the individual statement I had proposed that could have been a recommendation had we had time to discuss it before the draft went out. You know, with that said, we should look at today's discussion as focusing on whether or not the modifications that I have made to recommendations A, B, and C are okay with all of us in response to the comments. And we can, of course, still, as people see fit, improve the chapter in other ways unrelated to these comments. Or, when we have our follow-up discussion about recommendation D, get into some of the other aspects of ways in which we want to look at perhaps even new recommendations. Starting with recommendation A, and do I have scrolling rights, Jean-Baptiste? I think I do.
Yes, you do, Drew.
Okay, great. So recommendation A, just to recap, in our carrot and stick approach, this was the carrot aspect of it where we were looking for ways to enhance the safeguards, because from what we saw with our analysis and including the quantitative research that we commissioned, we saw that the safeguards put in place as part of the new GTLD program alone did not prevent the types of technical abuse that the community feared and anticipated would come about with the expansion of the DNS. Of course, it also was not the doom and gloom where the new GTLDs were nothing but abuse, but that same sort of abuse was not prevented from migrating to the new GTLDs. And so what we previously proposed was for the community to develop incentives and even look to perhaps financial incentives to get operators to adopt best practices. And this proposal from those who did comment received more support than opposition. There were 7 comments that supported it, 4 that were opposed to it, and then 2 that were neutral and 3 that gave no indication of their support. So of those, with those that were opposing this recommendation, the criticisms really fell into 3 different buckets. First was a concern as to whether or not this recommendation, as worded, would actually be, having ICANN go beyond its mandate. Then the second was a concern about potential liability shifting, whereby this recommendation would make operators that would have not otherwise been liable for individualized abuse going on with registered domain names all of a sudden liable for that. And the last one was concern about whether or not our analysis actually proved this underlying basis of a need for proactive or for some sort of new proactive anti-abuse policies to be adopted, or whether the reactive approach was working fine. And so with that, analyzing these concerns and these comments, it really seemed that the merit to these comments would be if our recommendation was interpreted in a way in which we did not intend rather than as intended. And so to clarify all three of those categories of concerns, I went ahead and did edits, and then Laureen also contributed to some edits yesterday after I presented these to the sub-team. And so what you can see is an effort to clarify what our intention was with this, but also to the only substantive shift here would be that instead of merely saying that the community should look at incentives, we're now instructing them also to look at mandates or incentives, because certain things perhaps would be better intended for a variety of reasons to just be mandated in agreements, and other things still perhaps incentive-based. And so I can have all of you, I guess, just take a look at the text and let me know your reaction to that. And while you're doing that, too, I'll just point out that some of the positive comments that were supportive of this, they thought we should go even further and require, perhaps be prescriptive about even the models of registration restrictions and such. And so, of course, as we discussed, we believe in the diversity of the marketplace with domain names, and that there are going to be TLDs that are going to be completely open and presumably low priced. And so, therefore, we still think that there needs to be something that goes against the abuse trend in those cases, too, without completely disrupting the models. And so I know that's something we already had to discuss as a team, but I just wanted to bring that up.
Drew, Jonathan, and Jordan have raised their hands.
Oh, yeah, I'm not seeing that. I had a window blocking it. Jonathan.
Thanks, Drew. Just as far as the objectors, it's been a while.
Can you speak louder, Jonathan?
Sorry?
Can you speak louder?
Louder? Okay.
Yes.
How's this?
Only a mote better.
Is that better?
Nope.
Can you hear me now?
You're still sounding far fainter than usual.
Is this better?
That's a tiny bit better.
Okay. I recall that there were comments from some that were concerned that good guys do good things and bad guys do bad things, and that the mere adoption of practices same as executing them well, and that you end up providing incentives, financial incentives for bad actors because they, on paper, adopted some DNS abuse prevention practices. That seemed like one of the objections that came up, and I don't know if that fits in one of your categories.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, and I did address that to a degree with some of the language toward the end about those who have already adopted or implemented. So, yeah, so that criticism was actually a kind of twofold, where it was a overall supportive of what we were doing, but the concern was either, like you said, that there could be a compliance checkbox or someone got rewarded somehow through an incentive just by adopting practices. And then secondly, that those who were already adopting best practices were not receiving any sort of incentives because they had already done so. And so we have the language about already adopted. And then in terms of the fear about a bad actor adopting them and it truly being bad, we're very deferential, because we have to be, in to the community for actually developing the specifics of the policy. We're providing the framework. And so that's something where, to me, it seems like if a bad actor adopts these practices and they're actually good practices, then you would not see the levels of abuse. Otherwise, they haven't truly adopted the practices. They've merely made a false claim they've adopted the practices. And in fact, there would be even more of a compliance risk for them in terms of ICANN compliance being able to suspend them or sanction them in some way for that.
Sure, but I guess we've also found the compliance savvy difficulty getting contracted parties to adhere to their contracts today, right? So, I mean, I don't know if increased compliance risk is a sufficient incentive to become a good actor.
So the thing is, though, about these recommendations, they are meant to be holistic, with recommendations A, B, and C all hopefully being adopted, because of the way that we are, on the one hand, providing incentives to encourage best practices to for operators that wouldn't otherwise adopt them, but then also giving ICANN compliance more power to go after cases of systemic abuse. And and we can get to how that one's been enhanced and modified too in response to the comments. But basically, that's something where the hope with this would be that we are getting the community to further empower ICANN compliance. But with all that said, do you have a suggestion about that? It's just something where I didn't see that concern alone made recommendation A, a pointless recommendation or something that really needed.
Incorporating some of that language from the comment about, making sure that incentives in fact work, or addressing that risk or something like that, to acknowledge that concern and sort of incorporate it into the recommendation in terms of what the community should take into account in their.
Okay, so that would be like a caution over implementation, I suppose.
Right, something like that, maybe.
Okay, I'll make a note.
I can try and make it work with you on some language or something like that, if it's helpful.
Yeah, that sounds good. But yeah, so that one, like I said, the hope would be, and so then this, your suggestion goes along with it, the hope would be that the way in which this policy would be adopted would be one for which it's not merely checkbox compliance for the best practice, where there has to, be some sort of results. And so therefore you would flesh out the bad guys who were merely claiming that they were adopting this.
Okay.
Thank you, though.
Offline, but thank you.
And then Jordan?
So thanks, Drew. I have, two comments. First is regarding some of the language up top about, in particular, language says about the new safeguards don't prevent technical abuse and have therefore failed to stop the proliferation of technical abuse issues flagged by the community prior to the expansion of the. That seems like a misleading statement, in that I think we determined that there isn't actually a net increase in technical abuse found as a result of the introduction of the new GTLDs. So it seems like the statement should be more like, and therefore have failed to make the new GTLDs more resistant to technical abuse than legacy GTLDs or something like that, as opposed to implying that the introduction of new GTLDs actually resulted in new abuse, which I don't think we actually have any evidence to support that. That's first. So maybe we can address that first, and then I have a question about the later down too.
Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, I use proliferation instead of increase. because it still spread to the new GTLDs, but I'm happy to modify that. Can you remind me again what you just suggested?
They can propose language offline, but essentially I think the goal, as I understood it, of the safeguards was to actually make the new GTLDs safer than the legacy GTLDs, right?
Exactly.
Like, put these protections in place and it'll be even better.
Instead,
we ended up with a system in which they're basically the same, right? And so
it
just sort of migrates between the two. So they're ineffective, but we don't want to imply that there's been an increase in overall abuse as a result of the new GTLDs because we found that it was sort of stayed constant, right?
Correct, yeah. Oh, yeah, I have the same exact intention as you, so.
I can provide some.
Okay, great, yeah. That sounds good. And then what was the second one?
Okay, and then secondly, it results in the, refers to the sort of introduction of the notion of talking about mandates in that, I guess, like we basically go from saying, like, we tried out these safeguards, they didn't really work, and before we were saying, like, what we want to do is take the people who, you know, we have seen some sort of market reactions to it. We've seen some people sort of adopting their own sort of, you know, their own best practices that seem to be working in some cases. And we want to just sort of create some market incentives or some mechanisms to incent that behavior. But now we sort of seem to be sort of backsliding to saying, like, oh, but sometimes we just want to create new rules that are going to apply to new GTLDs, even though we just decided that last time when we tried to do that didn't really work very well. So I guess I'm concerned about the notion of saying that we want to potentially impose new mandates, because I think, A, it sort of changes the tenor of this recommendation significantly, and B, it's the reason why my take, at least, is the reason why the safeguards didn't work is because by the time you get done negotiating them in the community, they get watered down to the point that they're not that useful. And any sort of attempts at future mandates are likely to meet a similar fate, whereas if we talk about incentives, you get the registries in particular coming to the table sort of trying to figure out ways to be clever that actually reduce abuse. Like, I don't think anyone – hopefully it's not the case. Like, there's some registries that I think are happy to take any business, regardless of who the customer is. But I don't think anyone actually sort of thinks it's a good idea to, you know, to create abuse for abuse sake. So if we can figure out ways to sort of get the registries sort of thinking creatively and, you know, partners and, you know, figuring out how to you know, come to the table and apply innovative technology, I think that's more likely to be successful than going down the path of mandates, especially since we just decided that they're not that successful. So I guess I'm just a little concerned about including the notion of mandates, because I think it's going to return us to the sort of same cycle of negotiation and community process that got us the original set of safeguards that we decided that didn't work.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely a fair criticism, because, as you know, I was, you and I, when we first started talking about this a really long time ago, were very enthused about the concept of incentives and all of that. So the mandate language was intended to help address some of the concerns, such as those Jonathan mentioned a moment ago, about the ways in which you know, incentives would work, as well as, you know, the people who had concerns about those who were already doing good things and, you know, weren't being rewarded and whatnot for that. But with that said, maybe that's not the only way to address those concerns. I am thinking, though, that if the community is going ahead and identifying these anti-abuse best practices, they might come out with certain things that just make sense around the board versus purely as incentives. but maybe that's something where that doesn't go into the recommendation, but can go into the details.
Well, I guess I would say that. So there is already this.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is already this process that exists, by which ICANN and the registries can periodically renegotiate their contracts. And actually, the last time this happened is there were a few things, like network ingress filtering, right, which is like a good security best practice that ICANN sort of lobbed into those negotiations. I think they became adopted as part of the new registry agreement. So I guess I would say if there's things that everyone in the community sort of agrees, like, oh, you know what, this is the best practice that everyone should be doing, there's already a mechanism for that to happen, whereas there isn't really any mechanism. Like, no one really thinks today about ICANN providing some sort of financial incentives for registries, like doing a good job on abuse. And I think at least my intent in thinking about this recommendation originally was to, like, focus thinking in a new way about the problem, as opposed to just sort of, you know, reiterating, like, yeah, sometimes we should come up with rules and registries should have to obey those. I think there's already a lot of that that goes on in the community, and I think what we found as part of this is, like, mostly that doesn't work. And so I think I would worry that the tendency would be for this to fall back into sort of everyone just trying to create new rules for the registries and those being unlikely to be successful. So as to the concern about, like, failing to reward people who are already doing good things, I think, you know, maybe we just need to change the wording to say, to make it clear that, like, if incentives were adopted, people that are already doing those things should also get the incentives, right? It's not intended to just apply to people adopting them for the first time. That would seem like the easiest way to address that particular concern.
Okay. And thanks, Jordan. And does anyone else have any feedback? Oh, and also, and real quick, John, before you speak, Jonathan, just for everyone here, maybe Jean-Baptiste, if you could give scrolling rights for some of these things too. There were updates to the body of the chapter itself too that provided more context, but not any substantive changes. If anyone wanted to skim through those in case they haven't seen them, so sorry, Jonathan, go ahead, and then I'll call on Wado after.
I missed it, but does it make sense to at least make a call out that says that if incentives are created, they should apply to legacies as well?
Yeah. So legacy GTLDs.
I mean, since
I think that's a great idea.
To abuse back there, but to but to actually decrease it, right?
Right.
Thought.
I like that. Not to chase it back there. Although some new GTLD operators would probably like that. All right. Okay. Made a note about that. Thanks. And then Wado. I can't hear you.
With the introduction of the, to me, I think Jordan also mentioned this. If I heard him correctly, it kind of changes the tenor of this recommendation and moves the focus away from this initial idea of adopting incentives. So I think I would be a little bit hesitant about this mandate part of this recommendation. I was more comfortable with the original recommendation where we were putting more focus, and I think the mandate part kind of draws that away. Then secondly, you mentioned some concerns that were raised, some of the public comments, and I was not clear how you dispensed with those concerns. The three concerns, they talk about being outside ICANN mandates, the liability shift, and the need for whether proactive policy is necessary. So I was not clear how you dispensed of those three concerns.
Thanks, Robert.
In your recommendation. Or did you just leave them alone?
Sorry, to prevent echo, I was just waiting a second to answer you. Thanks, Rado. So, yeah, so first of all, for the mandate, thanks again for adding support to what Jordan said. So I'll go ahead and take that part out, unless anyone opposes that. But then as far as the other two buckets of the of where I, you know, saw the main concerns going into, for the ICANN mandate, that's been addressed in two areas. So one, the rationale related findings. There's a reiteration here about how ICANN is committed to maintaining the, quote, operational stability, reliability, security, global interoperability, resilience, and openness of the DNS and the Internet. And then also at the very beginning of the chapter, a reiteration of this focus on technical abuse that's tied to that, because I think that concern about the mandate was really going to the fear that this would lead to content regulation. And, you know, so that is what I've done to try to address those concerns in those two areas, and Jamie helped with some of the language in the very beginning of the chapter. With that said, if you have any other suggestions for that, definitely let me know. This is obviously meant to be a collaborative process, so feel free to send me edits. And then as far as the other area, for the underlying basis for the shift from reactive to proactive, I've gone ahead and, you know, clarified that a bit more. We had already had a very clear example because we were talking about, you know, that really especially applies to domain names that are maliciously registered rather than those that are legitimately registered and later compromised. And so we already highlighted an area where the DNS abuse study called out .top domain names, and there were 88 of them associated with abuse, and of those, 75 of them were, you know, permutations of Apple products, and so that's something where clearly, had there been some sort of flagging at the beginning, then abuse could have been prevented, and so I added a sentence for clarity there. Then also what I did is I added a link to published best practices for other internet infrastructure providers. So in it's now footnote 73, and that's from MOG, which is one of the groups that actually did one of the public comments. And so they published best practices for hosting and cloud providers to do just this. And so similarly, we are not, you know, creating some sort of brand new concept here with this proactive anti-abuse approach. It's already used in other parts of internet infrastructure. So I've done that too to further add that context. I see your arms still up, so feel free to chime in again, Rado, if you want, if that didn't answer your question. Okay, great. Does anybody else have any questions before we move on to recommendation B? As of now, I will take out mandate. I will make sure that we're all clear on what we mean by fail to stop the proliferation. And so Jordan might send me suggested language. Otherwise, I'll also look to other language there. And then Jonathan is going to have some language to contribute as well to this one. And then we want to reiterate that this should, of course, apply to legacy GTLDs if they are adopting best practices. And so we'll do that. And so please let me know if I missed anything there. Okay, if not, then then there will be another updated version of this that will go out for us to agree on. Oh, sorry. Yeah, Wada.
With regard to making a special mention of the inclusion of legacy GTLDs, what was mentioned by Jonathan, perhaps that is taken care of when we talk about consider directing ICANN to negotiate amendments to existing registry agreements. We are talking about total existing registry agreements. Or is there a place here that indicates this only new GTLDs?
That's a good point. I mean, I think you're right that technically that language takes care of it, but there could be ambiguity because our focus has been on new GTLDs. So we could just say existing.
All right.
So in the details, we could still put a little more clarity. But, yeah, that's a great point. I think you're right. So the recommendation wording itself is probably fine, and it's more in the details we'll add that language. Thanks, Wada. Okay, so if nobody else has feedback on this one, then I'll move on to recommendation B. Thank you. That was very constructive and helpful, everyone who spoke up. So for recommendation B, I'm scrolling. Recommendation B was consider directing ICANN.org and its discussions with registrars and registries to negotiate amendments to the registrar accreditation agreement and registry agreements to include provisions aimed at preventing systemic use of specific registrars for technical DNS abuse. And so this, you know, moving from the carrot that we discussed, this is going back to the stick. And so this one, we actually only received one comment that was in opposition. The other comments were supporting it. Fewer people commented on this one in general, but we had 5 supporting comments, 1 against, 1 neutral. And then there are 8 comments that gave no indication one way or another on this. And so for this one, with the critique, it was about the, and this is a common one that seems to come up beyond our review team, but just whenever ICANN holds sessions on the new DAR project for DNS abuse reporting, it's the same concerns from the community about third-party information being used in any sort of compliance capacity with regard to DNS abuse, because there's a fear about the reliability of this data and whether or not that this is something that is intended to be used in this way. And so with this, we were already neutral to a degree about, or rather fairly open about which type of data should be used. We basically were trying to take the position that if something is well known, it shouldn't be ignored merely because there weren't individual complaints filed against every single domain name that was bad and associated with a given registrar. And so what I've done is I've gone ahead and made this a bit more robust, and Laureen also contributed to this as well, to, build more of a process in place, but two, kind of reiterate that we're talking about how this information can come from a wide variety of places, not just DAR. And that even once the information comes in that's highlighting this sort of systemic abuse, there still needs to be a process that's followed, and that this information could, in fact, trigger an investigation, which then, in fact, could trigger some sort of compliance process, but that the fact that, you know, someone has a bunch of bad domain names on a blacklist alone is not, you know, the end-all be-all of the process. And so, and that's also because the there was the critique over whether or not, you know, as we had it written, there was a presumption of guilt. And so, if you take a look at the specifics now here, basically, if ICANN compliance is, receives a formal complaint or is otherwise made aware of this sort of systemic abuse associated with the party, then they need to actually begin an investigation. And so this is something where a formal complaint would come in from the community in the same way it comes in now for individualized domain names, but now you could actually make one, about a party. And then for the otherwise made aware, that's something where if the ICANN security team is noticing something with DAR or something else, or FSAC is noticing something, or there is, these annual cybersecurity reports we all see from time to time that highlight that a particular TLD is very problematic or a particular registrar is, then rather than not being able to do anything, then that's where ICANN compliance, upon coming aware, could initiate an investigation. And then even when an investigation is actually carried out, there needs to be some support from ICANN security in actually verifying that that there really is credibility to such reporting. So an example of this could be that ICANN compliance goes and actually tries to resolve domain names on a blacklist and finds out, yes, it seems like of those still active, they really are being used for botnet command and control or something of that nature. And so that's where, that would really have that added safeguard. And if you recall, with all of our recommendations in general, we were purposefully vague because our intention was to ensure that the community would hash out the details in their policymaking role. But with that said, I think that these fears, perhaps are justified, so that we should provide a little more clarity on what we intend in terms of a framework. So hopefully this added language is helpful for you in seeing, the approach that Laureen and I took through addressing this. So please let me know if you have any feedback on this. I'll give you guys just a minute to read it, because I know it's longer than the last one. And otherwise, we can jump to the next recommendation. Okay, well, feel free to then give me feedback via email, even on this one, if there's any added language or modifications to my new language that we should make. But I think this preserves our full intention with this recommendation, and hopefully improves it and makes it a bit more robust and less ambiguous about what our intentions are with it. Okay, great. Thanks. So now, moving on to recommendation C, this recommendation was one for which we received no opposition. We did, of course, like with the others, receive feedback in terms of improvement or fears about it, but this is the one where we're calling for essentially some sort of regular studies, whether those are, studies that are independently commissioned like the one we did, or whether it's part of what DAR produces. And this is one where, again, we already in our language were purposefully not overly prescriptive in saying which way it needed to be. We were emphasizing the type of data that needed to exist. But nonetheless, some of the fears from the community, again, were about DAR itself, even though we said including but not limited to DAR. And so with this one, the overall the community's seems supportive of getting the data out there. There certainly is, there's certainly fears about, I guess, what would be made public. And again, that really in the comments really focuses on DAR, not necessarily what we're talking about. And so even with that, though, I think that, you know, is something that, you know, is going to be an ongoing concern anytime we're talking about transparency, where it's possible that in reporting a particular TLD or a particular operator is publicized to be associated with high levels of abuse or something. And with that said, I don't think that's something that we necessarily need to address with this, and that we need to say that that the reports should be tailored so that all parties are protected or anything like that. Instead, what we're striving for here is really getting data-driven policymaking. And this is something where, for us as a review team, we had to go out and commission this multi-year study because we had no data to go off of that was quantitative data. And so what I've done with the modifications to this recommendation, and another suggestion was that we actually put a time frame in here, and that came from NCUC. So I've gone ahead and tailored this a bit more so that, one, we're and also addressing the financial concerns that ICANN.org laid out, so that, one, we're clarifying that this is something we see as being regularly published, so that way it's current and actionable data for the community for policymaking, and then also clarifying that it's not intended to be a historical study again, and instead it's supposed to, you know, because it's going to be current and regular, we're talking about data, whether it's provided by DAR or independently commissioned, being available in these shorter snippets on a regular basis, and as a follow-up to what we've already done. So does anyone have any feedback about that?
So, Drew, this is Jamie. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
So just one quick comment that may be relevant to this on the previous recommendation. In our discussions and compliance discussions with registries and registrars, we have emphasized that DAR, as an aggregator of data, is a guide and it is not an enforcement tool. In other words, in order to take any enforcement action against a registry or registrar for an abusive domain name abuse, we have to have actionable evidence, and the DAR output itself you know, may suggest targets for investigation, but it does not in and of itself have actionable evidence. And so that's something you could, if you wanted, put out in the thing, and that, you understand, in order for any action to be taken against a registry or registrar, there has to be actual evidence of wrongdoing, and an aggregated list for output doesn't provide that. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. Yeah, I think that would actually probably further allay any sort of fears, providing that clarity. I think that's a really good idea. So I'll do that. And then, of course, if recommendations A, B, and C are all adopted, then it continues this kind of holistic thing where, to the extent DAR triggers awareness, then there's already another process in place, which requires evidence and everything for the systemic abuse. And otherwise, if not, then there's other forms here for action plans. But yeah, I'll go ahead and do that. So that way, because I think that's really important, so that way we're not taking away from the merits of this recommendation by getting into the minutia about DAR. So I appreciate that clarification. All right, Wado, see your hand.
My question is, what's the basis for this time frame of reporting? Possibly not less than annually. I think you mentioned something, but I didn't quite get it. Where did you get the basis for that?
Sorry, what's the basis for what?
for the time frame for the for reporting the DNS abuse. You have said it should be ideally quarterly or not less than annually. Well, why not? Why can't it be on a continual basis as it happens, for example?
Yeah. So the quarterly versus annually actually came from looking at the report we commissioned and how throughout the year there were different spikes. For example, when perhaps phishing campaigns were underway, and then there were lulls in DNS abuse. And so, merely annual reporting might not give the a full snapshot of where things are. Or if you had the quarterly reporting, you would know there's a problem going on right now with, you know, a specific type of abuse and whatnot. So that was the intention there. It was actually based on looking at the way in which the data broke out in that study.
If you say that, then maybe you better remove the annually part. Just leave it at quarterly. I just say ideally quarterly, because annually is too long. If there are those spikes, one might not be able to see them in time to take corrective action. Could you consider leaving out the annually part?
Could you do that? So the reason why I've given the flexibility is also to balance cost concerns, depending on how such research would be carried out. But I mean, we could put quarterly and drop annually, but that's why I put quarterly as the goal and then annually as kind of the stopgap to make sure it doesn't go beyond that. Because what I want to prevent is that this isn't looked at, quarterly's too expensive, and then it becomes something like the study we did where it takes years to get thing, and then you only have historic data to go off of.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Laureen?
So this is just a quick follow-up to Jamie's comment, and I was wondering if the edit in recommendation C, where now I'm having trouble finding it, but basically the reference to enforcement only taking action based on the actual as determined by the facts presented, that there it is, if that helps meet some of your concerns. Because what I heard you say is that DARS hasn't been presented as something that's going to trigger enforcement action, but I think the thrust of our comment is it should at least under certain circumstances trigger some scrutiny.
So I wasn't aware of that specific edit, and this is objecting to anything that's in there already. I was just trying to relay a concern that we had heard in discussions about DAR, and we in compliance will continue to use DAR as a guide to where abuse is taking place. My only point was that DAR alone doesn't provide sufficient evidence of actual abuse that you need to go beneath the aggregate to get that. And the reason for the concern among contracted parties is that the underlying DAR are these RBLs compiled by different organizations, and while they have a process for eliminating false positives, there are times when domain names remain on those lists long after abuse has been eliminated from them. So they don't want to be, rightfully don't want to be held accountable for, you know, something that either they corrected or is no longer a problem.
Right.
So it's just a measure of assurance. I mean, we're going to continue to give that in the community, as people raise concerns about DAR and what compliance does with it. This is an opportunity to further clarify that.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense to me, and I just wanted to point out that edit and also make sure I understood the landscapes. And actually, that's very helpful to understand. So thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, both of you. So adding in Jamie's suggestion for clarification, other than that, is there anything else that anyone sees that is needed for this recommendation, or are we okay with the language as is? And as I mentioned before, if you want to get me something via email, that's fine too. Okay, well then, I will go ahead and add some language that I think will hopefully echo what Jamie had said, and otherwise, Jamie, feel free if you have some specific language in mind to send me some language. Just make that slight modification to this. And then if anyone thinks of anything else, just email me. And then the last thing to discuss today, or I guess second to last thing, because then I wanted to just talk about the chapter broadly, but the last sort of recommendation is ended up being the individual statement, which was the recommendation that I had proposed, but I proposed it too late for us to discuss it before the draft chapter went out. So we were never able to adopt it or reject it as a team. Nonetheless, it went out to the community, and there were three comments on it, and all supported it. And so let me see if it's actually in this document. It's in our spreadsheet. Jean-Baptiste, are you able to put it on the screen, actually? Because maybe that would be easiest. Okay. All right, but basically the gist of it, but I want him to put the exact wording on, was that ICANN should collect data about and publicize the chain of parties responsible for GTLD domain name registration. And what this was getting at was the lack of data with regard to resellers, so that you could have a registrar that has many resellers. Maybe the registrar as a whole is actually okay, but they have one particular problematic reseller. And this is something where, because the data is not available, particularly in aggregate, then it's very hard from a research and data collection standpoint to identify this to begin with. And then it's also potentially difficult from a compliance standpoint to do anything about such a reseller. And in the cybersecurity community, we see this a lot, where resellers and particular types of resellers are used by certain bad actors, because they know that they can get away with registering domains there and engaging in abuse there without, being easily suspended. And so that's something where, similarly with the DNS abuse study itself, those researchers, they talked about the fact that that data would have been really crucial in their analysis. And as we're making all these good policy adoptions or policy recommendations, it's important that this is carried out through the chain of parties involved in a registration. And also, as far as data-driven policymaking, it's important that this data is available. And so our recommendation is not prescriptive as far as, who it should look like or any of that. It's more that just this should be something that is collected and publicized. And so even though this is something that's talked about in other ICANN work streams, I think it is important for us to go ahead and put this out there. And then we got support on this from comments from At Large, Business Constituency, and GAC that supported making this data available. So, okay, and Jean-Baptiste said it's taking some time to load the comment or the recommendation. But anyway, so I just want to see if this group was okay with us adopting that as a formal recommendation or had any edits to that or was completely opposed to it. Jordan, I knew you would speak up.
Yeah, I won't go so far to say as I'm completely opposed, but I do think that given that there's a bunch of work going on around who is right now, the best strategy here seems to just sort of be to flag this as an issue and make sure addressed in one of those streams, as opposed to creating a separate implementation track for the CCT that also needs to think about who is. Because that will, I mean, nothing ever happens on who is ways. I think GDPR is going to finally force that to change. But, you know, it's a topic that's been discussed for 20 years in ICANN at this point, almost as long as, ICANN's existed, there's been a lot of conversation about who is with very little progress on the topic to show, and I would just hate to burden a CCT implementation team with needing to do anything that touches who is. So I think from my perspective, it's fine to say, hey, this is an interesting, you know, it would be very helpful for research purposes to have this information, and it might be valuable to the security community and, you know, the various work tracks that are looking at, you know, the follow-up WHOIS review and the various GDPR work streams and so on. Like, you guys should consider this as opposed to having it be a standalone thing that the CCT implementation tries to deal with.
Laureen?
Thanks. So I'm going to take a diverging view. I'm pretty involved with a lot of the discussions on who is, and one thing which I haven't really seen focused on at all is this issue of resellers. Indeed, it seems outside the discussion, even though I agree with you analytically, it should be right in there, but it isn't. Therefore, I think we would be doing a real service by actually flagging this issue and making sure that it's taken care of. I'm waiting to see this upload because my sense of it, and Drew, you can let me know if I'm wrong, my sense of it is that there would be an obligation to collect this information, but I don't know that it went as far as to say it should be published, which I think will probably run square into a lot of the issues that are currently being fervently debated in the who is context. But I think recommending that there's an obligation to collect this information actually moves the ball forward on an important issue in terms of mitigating DNS abuse. So I very much support this.
Thanks. Yeah, so, okay, Jordan again. I feel like a presidential moderator.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate, like, Lauren, I know you've been working on who is for a long time. I just want you to think back and think how much time has been invested into talking about who is within ICANN and how little result has been emitted as a result of that. I don't think the CCT is not a magic wand that is going to fix that problem. And I think it is totally fine for us to say, you know, like, who is review 2, take a look at this, or, you know, there's some other PDP that should take a look at this. But, man, I would hate to be on a CCT implementation team that had any expectation that they were supposed to do something to change who is, because the track record in ICANN, and I say this having chaired a who is task force for 5 years with essentially no result, the track record of actually being able to accomplish anything productive is so poor that it just seems exceptionally cruel to the review team to try to oblige them to tackle this topic when there are parallel worksheets. And I agree with you, Lorraine, that like other people aren't looking at this right now, and so I think the intent should be to say someone else needs to look at this because it's an important issue. But I don't think it should be part of the implementation work stream that the CCT implementation effort is expected to undertake, because I just think that will add years of work to the implementation with a low probability of it doing anything useful.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree with your statements of fact about the lack of progress and all the challenges. I guess where I disagree is the conclusion, because I think the fact that this important issue hasn't been tackled to a reasonable conclusion in the past doesn't mean we should shy away from it. And maybe we could be uniquely positioned to do some good in this area. But I hear your concern, and I guess we'll just have to agree to disagree. And time may prove me hopelessly rosy on this, and you may be right, but I still think it's an issue we should tackle.
The other thing I'll add is I just think this issue has very poor nexus to the new GTLD program in particular. There's just nothing about the introduction of new GTLDs that makes this more relevant. Like, this is an issue for legacy GTLDs just as much. And it just seems, to a certain extent, like a abuse of our trust to say, hey, we noticed this issue while we were looking at new GTLDs. It doesn't really have anything to do with new GTLDs, but someone should fix it anyways. Even though there's other groups that are actually charter, take a look at this. I don't know. This just seems like I don't actually disagree with the substance of it. I think have tracking tracking resellers is probably a net gain for ICANN, but I do think it's A, outside of our charter, and B you heard what I said before, but it's particularly worrisome that we're venturing into who is when it's not clear to me what the nexus to the new GTLD program is.
So can I jump in now? that was great.
Definitely.
To hear both sides of that. So first, in terms of the potential difficulty and whatnot, if anything, Jordan, I kind of think this would be like GDPR, where this would actually be an impetus for change, and this is such a minor thing, unlike the GDPR situation with Whois, where probably everyone will be unhappy with the ultimate outcome. This is one where I don't think it's like this is controversial, and I think that even in terms of this going into some sort of implementation, I think that it is important enough that it should be, because it really creates this gray area of parties that don't have, you know, any sort of direct contractual relationship with ICANN. And obviously there's provisions that flow down to them. But, you know, it really is this gray world where DNS abuse absolutely does occur. I think it is relevant to the new GTLDs because we have so many more new GTLDs. And you have so much more ambiguity in terms of trying to figure out this sort of registration chain of custody, so to speak, with this. I don't think it's an abuse of anything with us, because with our mandate, we kind of, like with the safeguards and whatnot, we're still looking at whether the safeguards put in place prevented all of this stuff from happening in the new GTLDs, and they didn't. And then also, even with all the other data we're calling on to be made available, I think this is compatible with that, where the data still is going to have its limitations unless this also exists. And this was something that was even identified by our own researchers that we commissioned for the DNS abuse study. So perhaps we want to, now I see that it's actually displayed on the screen. Perhaps this is something where maybe we want to modify the rationale a bit or the details, but, you know, I'm still very supportive of the recommendation itself.
Drew, can you help me understand better? I actually totally don't understand what you said about the nexus to new GTLDs. You said there's a bunch of more new GTLDs, and therefore it's harder to track. I don't understand that. It's like, I don't, like in .com, I imagine there's more resellers for .com and more layers of resellers for .com than any new GTLD. So how is this problem any worse or any different as a result of the introduction of new GTLDs? Because I do think when in our early discussions about the charter of our group, we agreed pretty solidly that we were limiting ourselves to changes that were introduced, you know, to things that were different as a result of new GTLDs, not things that happened to apply to GTLDs and also the legacy GTLDs.
Sure. Well, now you have so many more parties in terms of registries or registrars, and then in terms of resellers, we don't know, right? And so that's where there's an even greater, I think, unknown universe with this. And specific to the new GTLDs, this was something that was, you know, a data point that our own researchers identified as being one that, prevented them from drawing even more insights as to where the breakdowns were with the new GTLDs.
I guess, but the new entities aren't the part where they had a problem, right? Like the place where they had a problem was the resellers, and that problem seems identical to legacy and new GTLDs. I just don't understand how the introduction of new GTLDs made the visit regarding resellers any worse or any different. It just seems like an exact same problem. Like if we would have had this discussion, if they would have done the exact same research on just the legacy GTLDs, they would have had the exact same problem and put the exact same note in their research. It just doesn't seem to have anything to do with new GTLDs per se.
But the fact that we have new parties, we potentially have infinite more resellers. I mean, I'm not sure. That's something that we can't prove or disprove with that. But I think that the fact that we have more contracted parties for which ICANN is responsible for enforcing compliance, and then still completely, are in the dark as to who the secondary parties are, which there isn't that direct contractual relationship, that is more going to be potentially more of an issue with new GTLDs by the nature of there being more parties there. So when you're talking about the legacy GTLDs, you're talking about a smaller group of parties have that those contractual obligations to ICANN, and for which, I'm not going to disagree with your point that it's completely similar with legacy GTLDs on that count of where the breakdown would be, but now you have more parties that ICANN has to do compliance against, and yet we still have this reseller issue where it's in the dark. And this is something where even from like I was saying, even if you just look at the data points alone and trying to figure out the nuances of issues with new GTLDs, this is something that is necessary.
Jonathan,
oh, thanks for telling me. Jonathan, yeah, I didn't see that. Had a window blocking it again at the Excel sheet. Jonathan.
I feel like I'm the new David Taylor. I guess I share
Karma.
Jordan's concern about, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I share Jordan's concern about the scope, but at the same time, the idea was that the new GTLD program was supposed to make the world a better place, sort of, so to speak, in many respects, and be a laboratory for change, and if we're stymied in our ability to examine that change, then it's worth trying to correct that for future research. But at the same time, I guess we have a lot of recommendations that are aimed at other bodies inside of inside of ICANN. So is it possible, Drew, to make the implementer of this recommendation the current Who Is team, or is that feel like it's going to get lost there?
To make the implementer the Who Is team?
Well, right, because we have some recommendations that are targeted to the subsequent procedures working group,
right,
for example. But, I mean,
I think that's a great idea. I think that's a great solution, because I don't think any of us are disagreeing that this is and same thing with the three comments we received. No one's disagreeing that this is something that should exist. And so, obviously, instead now we're debating our own scope or why the new GTLDs. But I think that's a good solution. I think we adopt this recommendation, but target it to the WHOIS team. So that way it's not holding up another work stream to Jordan's sphere. Jordan, is that something that you would be amenable to?
I think it's kind of what he was suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was trying to say earlier, basically, was just to flag this as an issue to be addressed by another body, and specifically a body that's chartered to deal with WHOIS stuff.
Okay, I think I interpreted what you were saying as saying we shouldn't even speak about the issue. Sorry about that.
Oh, I just don't want, I just don't want a CCT, I don't want it to be the responsibility of the CCT implementation team to be to figure out how to do this, right? I think it should be a WHOIS, one of the bodies that's chartered to deal with WHOIS should say, hey, here's an issue, you guys should take this under consideration, you guys should deal with it, basically.
Yeah, I'm supportive of that. Sorry about that. I was thinking you didn't even want to talking about it because of the concerns you expressed with that. Yeah. I think that's I think that would be a good approach. So then, with that said, is there anything that should have changed with this recommendation other than who it is directed to? And then Jonathan, I guess while Jordan's typing, maybe some edits for the recommendation. Procedurally, will we go out and send this to the team via email for adoption like we were doing with the recommendation consolidations, or how would you like to do that? Or
yes,
do you want?
That makes sense.
Okay.
You have the edits circulated for edits and opposition, but then we'll make it an opt-out approval process.
And then, Laureen, are you agreeable to that approach with directing it to the WHOIS team? Or a WHOIS team? I acted as if there was one. That was ridiculous. Why did I say that?
There are several work streams in play. Candidly, not really, but I would leave it to the rest of the team to weigh in on this. I think it would be helpful if there were some crossover. So I don't object to this issue. Certainly involving a current WHOIS work stream, but what I would be concerned about is that it gets lost in the shuffle. Whereas if we keep a hand in it via the CCP review team, I think we have a much better chance of shepherding it to fruition. That's my view.
Trying to think if there might even be, but I would maybe Jordan weigh in from a technical standpoint. Aside from WHOIS, where we would make a WHOIS recommendation, because we're talking about a specific protocol there, Jordan, would there be any other mechanism you can think of where such information could be made available to the community directly from a registrar, where maybe it even requires an inquiry to a registrar or I don't know, something or some sort of reporting that a registrar would provide where in the absence of a WHOIS solution, so the ideal being a WHOIS solution, absence of a WHOIS solution, there could be some other sort of database that would have this populated. Like if that's very easy via you know, API and data that a registrar is already sending upstream to have this then maybe in a, I don't know, an ICANN repository or something. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, sure, there are ways to do that. I guess I'm super elected. So there is literally ICANN PDP looking at registry data collection and publication, right? And I'm super reluctant to say, in parallel to that existing, like, PDP, there should be a separate effort that decides just this one issue about resellers and potentially creates a novel technical solution for that. That seems crazy to me. Like, it just seems like the group that is already considering, literally, like, in their charter, is, like, considering what data should be collected by registries and registrars and how it should be published. Like, that group should make sure that they capture this reseller issue as well, as opposed to trying to spin up like a parallel implementation effort that doesn't.
Sorry, I guess I should have clarified. So meaning that we could direct this to multiple groups, kind of along the lines of Laureen's concern. So maybe we would direct it to that PDP, but then we would also direct it to one of the WHOIS groups or all of the WHOIS groups, but so that there are multiple parties responsible for this that are already working on related matters, but so that we're not waiting for the, you know, the ICANN 2050 to come, or WHOIS 2050 to come out, to Laureen's point, for this one particular issue. So I agree with not creating our own little thing, but that's what I was curious about. If there is some sort of existing data stream and policy group, So who would you think of, I guess, that we could direct this to as far as multiple parties where the chances are within a couple of years something would be done?
I don't think there's any such group. For the reasons I articulated earlier about like, the problem.
that reinforces my point, which is why I don't want it to go there.
My point would be like that doesn't change by that doesn't change, but all that happens by tagging this somewhere else, I mean, it just, like, I can't, like I said before, I can't imagine how it possibly makes sense to have a PDP that is literally tasked with saying, what is the information that registries and registrars should collect and how they should publish it, and then outside of that process, some other group is going to decide, you know what, there's some other information that needs to be collected and published, potentially through a different way, and have that all work happen. Like, that's just, like, that just seems, like, totally insane that we would have two different paths, one of which is trying to deal with the general problem, and one of them is trying to deal with this one specific issue, possibly coming up with different solutions. Like, we'll live with the bizarre legacy of that for another couple of decades, if that's the path. So I understand everyone's, like, anxious to solve this problem, but you can't solve WHOIS problems quickly. It just never happens. Never, ever, ever. Never happens.
Well, now we're solving them quickly because of this GDPR deadline, but separate and aside from that, I think maybe a proposal then might be for us to coordinate, but not hand it off, but coordinate with the ongoing efforts. And to me, that would include the PDP, although we all know that that has languished on the vine somewhat. And perhaps the WHOIS review team that is doing work now, and there may be other work streams that are under my radar screen right now, but certainly those two come to mind. And to the extent that ICANN at some point has processes where it's considering new standard contracts or negotiating its the existing standard contract. Those are sort of the three places I see this living. And I would say it would be good for our review team to have a hand in shepherding this rather than handing it off for exactly the reasons you're identifying.
I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like I guess we need to think, there's a general statement that we need to think through, which is for all of the action items that we have or the recommendations that we have are essentially group X needs to do what? Like, how do we imagine the implementation of that working? It seems to me like in all of those cases, we basically have to trust the other group to behave reasonably, right? Like, we're going to say, please consider issue X. They're going to consider it, and when they view that it's been properly considered, there will be some discussion back and forth. But ultimately, like we're suggesting they do it because we think that's the proper body to take on that work. And it doesn't seem to make sense that we're going to like second guess them for infinity and you know have the ability for the CCT implementation group to say like, no, we didn't like the outcome of that thing, and so therefore, you know, we're going to like raise the issue again. I think we are, like, in a bunch of cases, just handing off work to other bodies, and I don't understand why this would be any different since there's a very obvious set of other bodies that already are chartered to deal with this issue.
The funny part is we all agree on everything in terms of our suspicions about this getting done. But also the merits of this topic, and then obviously are disagreeing on whether this is something that we can and should task outside of WHOIS to the, you know, the subsequent procedures or to another PDP or wherever. What would be without it being to the point of being ridiculous, like Jordan, what would be multiple parties that you would be supportive of tasking this to? Or are you saying only WHOIS, even with your pessimism that nothing would get done?
I think it should be primarily targeted at the RDS PDP, because that group is really soundly chartered to deal with this issue. Like, it is literally chartered to consider what information should be collected and published by registries and registrars. But Lorian is right that the WHOIS review, like, potentially could take a look at this as well, but it seems a little bit more tenuous, right? Like, or less action-oriented. Like, a PDP, if the PDP agrees with us and they adopt a policy, then that becomes binding on registries and registrars, and then there's a built-in mechanism for it to actually happen. Whereas if you go to like the WHOIS review team and say like, you guys should look at this, like they can't actually change the contracts themselves. All they can do is say like, you know what, there should be a PDP on this, and then eventually that can be the thing that follow-up PDP could be the vehicle by which it could happen. But if fundamentally we want to change the contract between registries and registrars and ICANN in a compulsory and ongoing manner, like that's what policy development in ICANN is, and like we should channel that through the PDP process. And there's one that already exists here. That should be the primary focus of the recommendation.
Yeah. So I mean, because here's the thing: from our standpoint, we don't care about whether this is. I mean, ideally it should be published in WHOIS, right? But we're not obsessed with that. We're not obsessed with the protocol. What we care about is that this information is actually available to the community in some way. So, you know, I'm just wondering.
Just to be clear, that is literally the scope of the RDS PDP, right? Which is to consider the set of information that registries and registrars should collect, what should be published,
right,
and how they should publish it. So this is just one of the things we're saying. We should collect this, and you should consider, like, how you should publish it, like, as well, right? Like, that's why I'm worried about splitting this up, because it's already the case that they're considering, as distinct things,
what should be collected versus what should be public and how and who should get access to what.
All right, well, let me go ahead and take another look at this and think a bit more about different ways to direct this, maybe. And then I guess I can send it out to the whole review team to circulate and get feedback on. But thank you for articulating your concerns with all of that and for pointing out the strengths and weaknesses of directing it to different groups. I'll go ahead and take a look at this one again. Okay, so with that said, those are all the things I wanted to go over today. And otherwise, the chapter itself has now received edits from Maureen, Jamie, and myself to try to improve it. So some of it's stylistic, some of it is removing ambiguity where, maybe we weren't as clear with emphasizing it, a finding or whatnot, but none of the changes, to my knowledge, should be ones that substantively changed anything. So whenever you get a chance, please go ahead and look at the chapter and contribute edits. And, yes, and Jonathan corrected my grammar. He made an edit to my own language. I should have said me instead of myself, for the record. Thank you, Jonathan. And, so go ahead and please send me edits. And we still need to discuss, and I'll wait till David Taylor and I sync up on the actual public comments. We still need to discuss our most controversial recommendation, which was recommendation D here, and talk about the community feedback from that and figure out what we'll do as a review team with that one too. So there'll still be time to revisit the chapter as a whole in general, but get as many edits to me as possible as soon as possible. And especially for sure with recommendations A, B, and C, because otherwise I think we'll be going ahead and adopting those via email. So I owe you guys the updated versions of those, and we'll send those out, but definitely get me some feedback. Thank you.
Drew?
Yeah.
Drew? Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, since you mentioned that you will be expecting some input from some of the review team members, can you clarify by when you expect to have received feedback so that you can work on updating this chapter?
I guess it sounds like people will get me some feedback today on the recommendations itself, and then I'm not sure if those will include edits to the chapter, but I'm thinking that the chapter from my end will not be finalized until we've discussed recommendation D, in case that leads to any discussions that lead to further edits in the chapter itself.
Okay, sounds good.
So, so why don't we say, I guess I'm not sure when we're putting D on the agenda, but I think then this chapter should definitely be finalized within the next couple of weeks. I don't anticipate there being much more feedback beyond the next 2 weeks.
Okay, so what I'll write down is that you expect feedback on what was presented today, let's say by tomorrow, end of the day, to leave enough time.
Yeah, and then I can circulate the updated versions of these recommendations by the end of this week. And then the chapter
okay,
as a whole,
good.
that's the one.
We'll see once
a little longer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you for the clarification, Drew.
Thank you.
Is that the end of our agenda?
unless there is any other business.
Any other business?
If
okay, do you have anything logistically you want to add, Jean-Baptiste, or?
No, I mean, just what Drew just mentioned, if everyone could send their input before tomorrow and up to date, that would be great.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
All right, thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.